Thanks for tapping into Untapped Keg podcast, where we talk about sobriety and mental health so that you can take something, implement it into your own life. Where we believe there's only one right way to sobriety, that's the way that works for you. I'm RJ Zimmerman, and I have the honor of being here today with a fellow This Naked Mind certified coach, Celeste Price. How are you doing today, Celeste?
I'm good, thanks, RJ. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. This is you're someone who every time I hear you talk, I get inspired and motivated. And so having you on is it really is a privilege, and I'm excited to hear about that. And talking about, you know, every time you tell your story, could you give us a little bit of an understanding of how you got here?
Yeah. Okay. So much like anyone else's story, it's unique. It's taken a lot of twists and turns. So essentially, I started drinking at a really young age to deal with a lot of self-esteem issues. So really in high school, that's kind of where it all started for me. I struggled when I was young. I was overweight, and so I was bullied a lot for that. And so once I got into high school, when things were made available to me that, you know, would just kind of automatically make me feel better and make me really like charismatic, you know, I kind of fell right into that trap. So, that pretty much sustained me throughout my teenage years. And then when I got into my adult years, of course, you know, at that point, alcohol is just readily available and accepted and celebrated and promoted at every single turn, right? So I did become just kind of like the party girl that everybody would just call up to, you know, have some drinks with, and everything seemed, you know, relatively normal at the time, although looking back at it now, I can see where there was really some problematic behavior. Because of the society that we lived in, I never really questioned it until I was about 25 and I got my first pancreatic attack. So it wasn't even like a life circumstance that was bringing me to this realization. Like, it was a really quick bodily circumstance that told me, you know, this is actually way worse than I anticipated. So that's kind of at the point where I started to question my drinking. But of course, I didn't have any tools. I didn't have any kind of community. I didn't have anything really. And I, at that point, cognitively I was feeling like it was a problem, but then I think subconsciously I was like, it's fine. I'm sure it's not that bad. Like, it's probably just a fluke that you went through that. And then, you know, the years went on and I was trying to moderate and that just wasn't effective. And then the more that I tried to moderate and the more that I tried to get control of it, the less control I ended up having. And so I got really down on myself about that, you know, about thinking, you know, I'm never going to get through this and there must be something wrong with me because I can't get control of this. So fast forward a few years and I'm 30 and, it was my birthday and I was in rehab. I had my first, my really only stint at rehab when I was 30, which, you know, it got me sober for a period of time. But this was back in 2020. So February, 2020, I got out of rehab and we went straight into a pandemic. And I was like, oh my gosh, like all of the resources that were supposed to be available to me as like follow-up stuff, they were no longer. And so I was basically kind of writing the book about staying sober in a pandemic, in a circumstance that nobody could have ever imagined or prepared for. So I white-knuckled it for some time, for about 6 months after getting out of rehab. And then, of course, you know, again, because I didn't have the right mindset, it was just about resistance, and just about behavior change. And just if I could just like not drink, everything's going to be okay. I know that now that that's not the case. But of course, you know, slowly but surely, I started to get back into drinking. And then, you know, it didn't take long before I was really back into the thick of it. And then I spent about a good year or so after that, really just, again, trying to get through it, having periods of sobriety, and then going right back into it, and really, really making a ginormous mess of my life. So at that point, I was in a really terrible relationship. I was drinking all the time. I was very, very unwell, very, very unhealthy. And, you know, looking down the barrel of like homelessness. So I was tremendously lucky that my family, my parents never gave up on me, even though that they were getting information from, you know, like Al-Anon groups and things like that to really just cut the cord. So, I'm tremendously lucky in that regard, because I don't know where I would be without their support, truly and honestly. And then, so they took me in, and I ended up just finding the path. Actually, I should sort of back up a little bit. When I was in the rehab facility, I was hooked up with a psychiatrist, and she gave me this Naked Mind book. And again, these are sort of these universal alignments coming in, because I know now that, you know, it's not common for psychiatrists to give you books rather than medication. But she ended up giving me this book. And so I read it twice. And a lot of these things started to really kick in for me and resonate with me about it, you know, not being your fault and all the things that, you know, alcohol does inside the body and, you know, where it can take you with addiction and all this stuff, right? But of course, because I was drinking for self-medication and to manage some really, really deep wounds, that just wasn't sufficient enough for me. So I ended up finding the path, and I really can't even tell you how it came about. I think I was just kind of looking online and somehow serendipitously, found the website. Actually, I found the app for the 30-day alcohol challenge or, experiment, I should say. So I did that, and then, subsequently ended up finding the path, and that community and that information and that type of support was what really started my journey into sustainable recovery. So I went through the year-long path, learned a ton about alcohol, a ton about myself. That's basically where it all started.
That is a journey, right? To say the least. And it, you know what, that's the thing, is it's still going on. And I think I know for real as well, you stop drinking, everything's supposed to be better. That drinking was the cause of all of it. Mm-hmm. And just coming to that, the realization, which is not a very quick one. And it takes a little bit to understand that drinking really wasn't the issue. It was a lot of other things, and discovering that about yourself along the way. But that connection that you were able to find, that, you know, your parents and your family were able to maintain with you, and then finding that in the path, how much was that a catalyst into being able to understand that I can do this?
It was a huge catalyst, but I have to say it was the first step of many steps. So even though, because at the point that I'd found the path, you know, I had already done a lot of legwork in sort of the realm of sobriety. Even at that point, I was still struggling. So, you know, it wasn't like I found the path and like, poof, you know, everything changed and overnight. It was just easy and simple. Quite the contrary, actually. You know, I struggled for quite a few months in the beginning, was having, you know, relapses, but, you know, we now call those data points, which is just a way better term for them. But at the, you know, at the time, I was still considering them to be, you know, these massive failures. So it was a ginormous step in my journey, but it was definitely one of many steps forward. And I think, you know, what you said before about, you know, discovering that it's not really about the alcohol, that was a big sort of turning point for me, and recognizing that at some point or another, the giving up the alcohol part was actually the easy part. It didn't seem easy at the time because I was physically addicted. But once I got over that hump, it was really dealing with everything that was underneath and underlying that addiction that was the true work. And so throughout the path, yes, it was a tremendous experience, and I learned a lot about myself. There was still a lot sort of underneath that I had to address. And so I ended up getting personal therapy, going through internal family systems therapy, which again is like, when I look back at the entire journey and I look at these like massive sort of milestones, the path being one of them, IFS being the next one, because there were certain traumas that, you know, the path just couldn't support me with. So I had to find extra support and resources for that. That was a big, big step for me as well.
And I think that's really important. What you said is it's not one size fits all, and it's not one thing is going to lead to everything else. It's a lot of things, and just being open-minded to it. And you're the first person I think on the podcast to bring up IFS, and it's really fascinating. Could you give like a quick summary of what, you know, internal family systems therapy kind of is?
Yeah, sure. So a really sort of surface level synopsis would be that we all have different parts. So when you look at like the diagnosis of like DID, which is
dissociative identity disorder.
That's the one, right? So, you know, that is a very extreme version of what's actually normal. So we all have different parts within us, and, you know, we're sort of born that way. Our psyche is made up of these different parts, and in a healthy development, these parts make up this sort of beautiful mosaic of what makes a person, right? So these parts are they're what's responsible for like creativity and spontaneity and dedication and motivation, all these really wonderful things. But when you go through a traumatic experience, these parts end up becoming your protectors, and they take on these very, very extreme roles in order to protect a vulnerable part within you, which is sort of your younger self, or the basically your most vulnerable part is the self at the age that you were when the trauma kind of occurred. And then the other parts come in to sort of protect you. And it worked for the time that you were experiencing the trauma. And that's why it gets sort of reinforced as you kind of go through life, is these reactions that you have every time you're triggered might work for a certain period of time until you reach a point in your life where these things are actually not working anymore. And in fact, they're causing a lot of detriment to you. So that's one area to it. And then your parts will also, because they're pushed into the extreme roles, they see each other as sort of the enemy, right? And so they start to conflict, and this causes a lot more turmoil within you, right? A lot more discomfort, because then there's parts just at war constantly. So now you're even more distressed, and you're constantly sort of activated because all of these different things inside of you are in conflict. And that's why you have these different voices, right? And I know people try to pathologize having voices in your head. And yes, at a certain point, there needs to be other approaches to try and deal with this. But we all have to admit, we all have different voices inside our heads, whether we hear them like verbally or not. So at one point in my life, it was just like, there was a part of me that when I was not relying on alcohol was just trying to like keep pushing and striving and make everything perfect. And that part of me was a protector for me when I was younger, but then, you know, as I got older, just caused me a lot of undue stress. And then the other part, the addicted part, was like, oh, well, you know, you need to just relax and, you know, here, like, I know exactly how to make this better for you. So I was kind of always in between these two conflicting parts. Being able to do some therapy where I could sit and be still and quiet and actually have a face-to-face conversation with these parts of myself. And again, I know this seems a little like woo-woo, but you know, you sit at this table and you would, the woo-woo works. You sit at a table and you invite all of your parts to sit there with you, and you give them all their time in the light to say, this is what I am trying to accomplish, and this is what, you know, I was taught to do, and all this stuff, right? And as soon as you can allow for those different parts to be sort of with at one with you, right, and you really listen to them and start to attend to their needs, they begin to drop arms, right? And they start to then accept these different roles that are actually going to be sort of developmental for you and actualizing for you.
Yeah. And this is, you know, like you said, it's woo-woo, but this is psychology. This is therapy. Yeah. This is like, and that's the thing with woo-woo is I used to think feelings and emotions were woo-woo, right? Woo-woo really is just what we call things that we don't yet understand. And it's something that like this, the IFS therapy, the internal family systems, when you think about it and you break it down, it makes sense, right? It may not be as grand as we might have to imagine it to get to understand it. However, finding your authentic self, finding what is really you compared to some of the beliefs that have been ingrained in you, some of the actions that you've done that you think have been helping yourself, but have really been pushing people away. Like it's a lot of uneasiness. It's a lot of discomfort, as you said. And when you can embrace that discomfort, it really can create this sense of yourself that you don't have to impress anybody anymore. You just get to be yourself.
Yeah.
Damn, that feels good.
Yeah. It's really remarkable when you can get past that belief that, you know, that you're here to impress other people and to meet the needs of others.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Thank you so much for explaining that, because the first time I heard it, I was like, that doesn't sound real. And the more that I learned about it, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people would benefit from having that, you know, maybe not even going through the therapy, but just learning about it so that they can understand some of the internal struggles that we have, that a lot of us have, we don't want to admit that we have. And it can just have this, the more you understand yourself, the more compassion you can give yourself. That's what I've come to learn. That's what I believe is when I can understand myself the best, whether that's the past that has gotten me to where I am, the future that I want to go, everything, like why my body works the way it does, and then why my mind interacts with my body the way it does. It allows me to understand different feelings that I have, different automatic reactions, things like that. And it makes it a lot easier to go through things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, you know, that you brought the attention to having the compassion and the understanding for yourself. But I think even further than that, what IFS has done for me is my compassion and understanding for others others has grown tremendously as well, because now I look at people and their reactions and I think to myself, you know, what part are they kind of over identifying with right now? And I know that that's not truly who they are at their core. So what are they trying to do? What are they trying to protect themselves from? And can I not even really address that with them, because I don't just like do this stuff with random people that I meet in a coffee shop, but just hold space and just to say, you know, like not counter react to it, but just to understand that they're coming from a place of fear, by and large, and just to say, okay, you know, this is not them. This is just a part of them that is protecting what's vulnerable underneath. So yeah, I have a ton more patience for other people.
it's amazing that when you find that, right? And even, you know, driving, I'll notice when I'm getting impatient and I'm getting like annoyed and irritated, it's like, okay, what am I irritated about right now? Not what they did, right? But what am I irritated about? Oh, I didn't leave enough time for me to get to where I'm going. All right, well, can't do anything about that now. I didn't before, so.
Yeah.
And the more that you do that, it sounds like I don't want to have that dialogue. That dialogue inside of me is less than a minute now. It's,
oh yeah,
it goes so fast. But at first it was legitimately having that full conversation and probably leaving a little bit of time in there for me to think about what am I actually irritated about right now? Mm-hmm. And that's woo-woo.
Yeah. Yeah. It, I mean, just years ago, like if we can just think about even just 10 years ago, God, all this stuff would have been just like, what are you saying? You know? So it's tremendous that we are shifting the paradigm so much in such a small amount of time. Like when we think historically how long this stuff has taken, in retrospect, like we're actually moving at like light speed now. But it's still going to take a lot of time, I think, for everybody to get on board with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you'd have told me a year and a half ago that one of my fundamental practices in the morning was journaling, and then I would have two different journals, right? I'd have a prompted and an unprompted. I would tell you to go fuck yourself. That's never happening. I'm never doing that. That sounds like a waste of time. And you're an asshole for even telling me that, right? Yeah. And now I'm actually doing that. And it's like, oh, it works.
Yeah.
And I make sure I tell people, like, listen, I was super resistant. I would have called myself an asshole. I would have said I have no fucking clue what life really is about. But it really does work. So do it how you want to do it, however it looks at first, right? And that's leaning into a lot of discomfort of being wrong.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh. it's a hard one, but man, was I ever wrong about a lot of things. And I can admit that now, but man, I did not want to be wrong. Even about me being like hopeless and all of the things that work for other people aren't going to work for me. I didn't want to be wrong about that. Like, and it seems crazy for me to say now, but I was so set in that mode of like, I know who I am. Nobody else knows who I am. And all of these things work for other people, but nobody knows what I've been through. And so, you know, yeah.
That sounds a lot like what I used to tell myself too.
Yeah. Like same thing, man. Like if, man, even just 5 years ago, if I had heard one more person just say, you know, like just meditate or go to yoga or journal or whatever, like there would have been physical violence probably. Like I wasn't hearing it until I got to a point where it was just like, man, I don't have this. I don't. And I need to just drop my own weapons and just admit that, like, I don't have the answer for this. And I just, you know, whatever it is that you think that's going to work for me, I'm going to give it an honest try and see what happens. Just no expectation. Just like give it an honest try and just see how it goes.
Yeah.
Man.
That's one of the most powerful questions I started asking myself was, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
And try it a different way. And if I'm wrong about that or wrong about being wrong, okay, I go back to doing it how I did it before. What do I lose?
Yeah.
Nothing, really. So it's, you know, and then I like to tell people too, how do you know if you've had your favorite food that you've ever tried, right? That you've ever had your favorite food, your actual favorite food, if you are not willing to try new foods to find it?
Yeah. So true. it's a perfect analogy. I love it.
So when, you know, when you're trying and doing all of these pieces on your journey that everything's adding up, right? Everything's stacking to get you to where you are now. And you have these seeds that are planting. Where was it that like you started to realize discomfort is actually where I want to be?
That's a good question. Because yeah, I think comfort for me and safety were really challenging because it was not something that I was ever familiar with. And so even when I felt comfortable and safe, there was a little part of me inside that was saying, this isn't right. Like, just wait for the other shoe to drop. Like, it's just going to be a catastrophe. Because I was so used to chaos that I even just like, probably went even looking for it because it was what made me feel safe, which is super twisted. But you know,
that's the same here. I've heard Trevor Noah say, and that was the first time I heard it, that he was comfortable in the chaos and he was uncomfortable in the calm.
Yeah.
And so we had to shift that. And it was like, that was my life. That was me. That absolutely was me.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of, you know, when did that all happen for me? I gotta say, I'm still in that journey. I'm still in the journey, particularly, when it comes to trusting other people. Because there's still a small part of me that wants to push people away and say, there's something not right about this. But at least I have the sense to be really mindful and aware of where that's coming from. And I can choose not to believe that anymore, as difficult as that can still be sometimes. I have to make that conscious choice to say, hey, listen, this is only you're resisting this because it's what you are conditioned to do. And you have the maturity and the wherewithal now to say, I'm just going to trust. And see what happens. Again, just still with the seeing what happens. So when it comes to comfort and safety and trust, it's something that I'm still working on.
Yeah. And I feel that same thing. So one thing that I did earlier this year that I kind of knew, but I found out for sure. And I found out like more about it. And it's allowed me to go back in my past and like find the root of where this happened. Find out my attachment style and find out like how that attachment style looks, what can kind of, you know, lead to having that and like disorganized, fearful, avoidant, you know, anxious, avoidant. Like that's me.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, this is me, so take me as I am. No, it's just a deeper, it allows me to understand myself. So if I know that that's my automatic response, then I can see when I'm drawn to do things, where that's coming from. So if I'm drawn to isolate, I know that this is a moment where I may not be looking for rest. I'm actually just looking to disconnect from somebody, from something, from people. And that is that avoidance side where, you know, it's not pushing people away. The fearful avoidant doesn't do that. They isolate sometimes and insulate, like go inside. So they can be there, but they're not really there. And that's me most of my life. So understanding that, and then all of a sudden, okay, this is a time where I can do something different and stumble into it. I think that's the thing with discomfort is after a little while, you think that leaning into the discomfort is going to be and feel easier. And it doesn't. And it doesn't come out. Nothing comes out the way you want it to. Nothing comes out like, you know, just this. That's exactly what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it. Like, it just doesn't.
Yeah, it's still a beautiful mess. And I love that you brought up that the leaning into discomfort never really gets easier. And you know what? That's okay. And you know, the sort of embodied perspective on this is like, now I've been doing these cold plunges. Like I go and I do a cold plunge every morning. And I gotta say, I stand at the edge of that water every single morning and not once have I said, I'm cool with this. You know, it doesn't get easier. And there's a part, like there's a large part of me that actually really enjoys that, because if I thought it was easy and if it was something that I just like looked forward to doing every day and you couldn't stop me from doing it, then I don't think I would just get that benefit of like every day I did something challenging, like I did something that made me uncomfortable, especially like first thing in the morning, so that all of the discomforts that follow that throughout the day is like, okay, this is not great, but I'm okay, I can lean into this, and I'm probably making it a lot worse in my head than it actually will be. And by and large, 99% of the time, it's true, right? Like I look at the discomfort and I'm like, man, this is gonna suck, and then I lean into it anyways. I'm like,
yeah, and that's where, like, of course we're drawn to comfort because it's not just easier, but it's like it's just there kind of a thing. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently too, about how in this growth and healing journey you can get caught up always trying to find the discomfort and always seeking that out, right? Oh, if I'm comfortable, then I'm doing something wrong and holding it against yourself. But you don't always have to be uncomfortable to be just living, right? It's just moments, noticing it. And this is where I think the power of words comes in. And I want to bring this up too, because we've been talking about discomfort. And you know, as you're really, when you're beginning the process and all of this, right? It's all uncomfortable and it's uneasy. And I start to describe it more as uneasy because I separate discomfort from uncomfortable. And I had done this because of some very painful life lessons that I have learned, which is I was uncomfortable for a long while in the summer and I couldn't figure out what it was, but I'm like, I'm supposed to be uncomfortable. I'm putting myself in uncomfortable situations to grow. And then I realized that it was a different feeling than discomfort was. And like discomfort is where I can grow, right? Like where the growth is. Uncomfortable, that was when I was back to people pleasing. That was when I was abandoning myself a little bit at a time and I wasn't acting in alignment with who I wanted to be and who I was. And so now with where I am, I differentiate the discomfort and the uncomfortable, where the discomfort is I'm acting from who I want to be, what I want to be, my authentic self. And uncomfortable is I'm acting against that and I'm still uneasy. And it's that watching out so that you aren't just creating uneasiness thinking that that's where you're supposed to be. What do you think about that?
I love that. That resonates with me quite a bit, because what you're talking about with being uncomfortable is when you're not in authenticity with yourself, like if you're not truly being who you are, that is going to feel uncomfortable. And you need to recognize that and say, this is not the type of discomfort that I want to be. And this is not that, like you said, the discomfort that promotes growth and I want to say like just self-discovery and embodiment. This is the uncomfortable that I need to be mindful of and address accordingly, because yeah, these are the types of things that when I was really uncomfortable and just kind of kept pushing, that's how I ended up in some really challenging spots. So yeah, I love that designation. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that was the same thing. I ended up in some spots that I was like, how did I get here? And when I looked, I was like, I'm back where I was a few years ago. And what? And so just not even getting mad at myself. That's a lie. I was mad at first, but then just realizing like, of course, like this is where I started going down this way. And that's, you know, that's where that saying, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Like you can put that onto, you know, where you're really unhappy with your life, right? Like when you're really low and you're, how did I get here? I was doing things. I started from a place of growth and healing and all of that. And now I'm just like, I don't know who I am again. I don't know. And how that can, and I mean, that's how it happens when we're younger too. I started, you know, in college, I was going to do this and this, and then just a little bit at a time, I lost myself along the way. Yeah. And getting back there, it's a hell of a process. You can't just go back to where you started. You actually have to go back through everything else. And it can be tough, but you know, one thing that I do recognize as well is the connections that you make, and especially the ones that you foster and grow, they can be that beacon, that lighthouse that when you are not sure, you can see and can, you know, it can provide you a light that you need.
Mm-hmm.
What has kind of been some of those lights that you've been able to foster?
Well, I gotta say, connection, like true person to person connection, was the missing piece, so to speak, for me for a really long time that I again wasn't even aware of. So at the end of last year, the path was done. I was going through the coaching certification. It was in December. And, you know, so we're coming up on a new year. And so I think just like all in all, you're reflecting on everything, right? And so I took some time to really take stock about how I was feeling. And I think because I just kept myself really busy, I wasn't really noticing how I was still in this sort of state of depression. And when I finally took a real look at that, it was really, really hard. Because for me, anytime I found myself in that state of depression from the, you know, the age of 22 to 32 or whatever it was, I could blame that on drinking. I could say, you know what, it's because I have this depressive substance in my body. And I either have it actively in my body or I'm trying to recover from it being in my body, both of which will put you in a state of depression. So I was just like, you know what, like anytime I'm in that state, I just told myself, we just need to ride it out. It's just a physical manifestation and we're going to be okay. Until I recognized the state that I was in last December, because I had not drank for many, many, many months. So I no longer had that thing to say, yeah, this is what's causing my depression. And so it was really scary for me because I now had no excuse for it, or at least I didn't know the answer to it at the time. Right. So I was like, oh my gosh, is this just something I'm susceptible to now for the rest of my life? Like, do I have to deal with depression on an ongoing basis? And so, yeah, it took me down like a really sort of dark road. Like I was in a really dark place there for a little while, luckily not for very long, because I had some tools at my disposal, thanks to the path. But that January, I made a commitment. And of course, you know, New Year's resolutions, whatever, you know, I don't know where you stand on that, but I made myself a New Year's resolution. And I said, this year is going to be about human to human contact. Because I didn't have that anymore. I had lost all my friends. I had lost any relationship I'd ever been in. You know, I had my family still, but even that was really tumultuous at times because there was still a lot of repair that had to happen there. So I didn't have anybody who really knew the new me, or, you know, I hesitate to say the new me because I think it's the me that I always was, but was just, you know, I was
the true you
in so much challenge that never really shone through. So now I've done all of this self work and I'm like, okay, I need to, it's enough. Like, I've done enough of the isolating and the turning inward to do all the fixing. I need to now start expressing that outward. So I did something bold and I went on the internet to find friends. Because yeah, again, at age 30, when you don't go to bars, and you know, we're post pandemic and things are weird and we don't know how to like have a human to human conversation anymore.
Yeah.
Like, man, how do people find friends? So, you know, I used the only tool that I really knew of was the internet. So I went on this meetup. Yeah, I know. Right. Like and this is it, right? Like, I had so many stigmatized beliefs about all this. I was like, man, what a loser I must be to have to like go on the internet to like make people be friends with me. But you know, going on the internet and connecting is not what it used to be, right? Like, it wasn't. Yeah, anyways, so yeah, I went on this meetup app and I found this group that did this cold plunging. So I went and did that, and I didn't know a soul. I didn't know what I was doing, but I kept looking at it and looking at it and saying that I was going to go. And then I kept putting it off. And then one weekend, actually it was again, my birthday. I just said, okay, listen guys, it's my birthday this weekend and I want to do this. And I need someone to hold me accountable because apparently I'm still not great in that regard. So this one woman reached out to me. She was so lovely. And she's like, I'll bring, you know, some extra stuff for you and we'll get you in there. And so, yeah, I ended up just showing up, not knowing where I was going, what I was doing, and who I was doing with. I was just there. And I met a really wonderful group of people. Yeah, when you get a group of people together who are doing something kind of crazy, like you get the type of people who are just really unique and exciting and connected and health conscious, but in a way that's kind of fun and not really like preachy. Yeah. So I found connection through that, and it was just like I'd come up for air. Like, I'd finally taken a full breath and I was like, whoa, like this is it. Like, not just the plunging, but like the people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so I found that there. And then I went to a local yoga studio because, again, I was doing yoga at home through apps. It's something that I started doing through COVID. And then I went and did like a month long membership there just because I was like, well, I'm really getting into the movement of it all, but I want to get some feedback. And I've never taken a class before. And I just want to make sure that I'm doing things properly so that I don't end up hurting myself. So I got this month-long membership, and lo and behold, again, I ended up in this space where I was like, breath of fresh air, like, oh my goodness, I am in amongst a community of people that just like their energy is so wonderful. And now I'm a believer of, you know, different frequencies of energy in people, because when you have a different frequency, you start to attract those type of people. And I'm not talking about like the manifesting money kind of, you know, type of stuff. I'm like, truly, when you raise your frequency, I think you're drawn to the things that are actually going to promote wellness. And I think, you know, connection is one of those things, right? So
yeah,
I ended up in this space where I was just in awe of this community and these people and just how lovely they were. Because again, when your life is just chaotic, you attract chaos. You attract the other chaos in other people's lives. And so for once in my life, I was in amongst people who, I mean, everybody's got a little chaos, right? But by and large, you know, they're solid, they're grounded, they're there, they're present. And it was really, really remarkable. So that has been over the last, we're coming up on a year now, the last piece for me that really sort of solidified, like, okay, this is what I really, really, truly was lacking.
Yeah. And it's fun that you did it on Meetup, because I actually started a Meetup group too, that I needed friends. And I was like, okay, well, how do you make friends when you don't go to bars, like you said? And so I started my own Meetup group, and I was like, cause it wasn't super focused around alcohol. And once a month we go to a coffee shop, and just, it's titled Coffee and Conversations. And sometimes we do other things too. Like, I have a few people in there who'll make different events, like dinners and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, not everybody who shows up is alcohol free, but everybody's just there to actually meet people and have conversations. And that just sets up an environment that has the people coming who want to connect and aren't there to judge, really. Like, nobody's there judging. It's just allowing people to be who they are. And that is, like you said, a breath of fresh air too. And hey, anybody who is out there looking for friends, go to, you know, Meetup. Meetup is honestly, it's a really great thing. And there's so many different activities on there that you wouldn't even think of. Hula hooping, like, you know, hula hooping group. Like,
oh my God, sign me up. Sign me up.
It's really awesome, the stuff that's out there. And that, like you said, it is so nice that when you start to connect with people on a level that isn't, oh, that weather today, right? Like, the weather's been cold. It's deeper than that. And it's just living life together. That's kind of really what it comes down to. And that is something that when you haven't had that for a long time, that when you have it, maybe it's your first time, it is different and disarming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kind of want to add a little caveat to that as well, because when I share my story and share things that, like, worked for me, I want to be really intentional about how much time it takes and how much patience and self-compassion you need to have, because, you know, as much as, you know, some of these influencers are trying to do good things, it really irks me when people, like, post a picture of themselves in active addiction, and then immediately after there's this, like, video of them dancing on a yacht in, like, the Bahamas, right? And so I love that they are presenting possibility, but I think that without giving the full story of the in-between, people are left with this impression that, like, oh my goodness, I can go from here to here in, like, no time at all, and all I need to do is give up alcohol. It's just not true. Alcohol, yes, giving it up is gonna, you know, catapult you into this type of work, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, when I first started reconnecting with the world, it was in a way that my inhibitions were still high. So the connection took a really, really long time. And so there were stories that I started to tell myself in my head about, like, oh my gosh, this is taking a really long time. Maybe it's because it's me. Maybe people don't really like to be around me, or maybe because I don't drink, people don't want to invite me places, and blah, 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 blah. Like, the committee of critics started to come back again, because I was used to, okay, I get drunk, I go to a bar, I meet other drunk people at a bar, and immediately we feel like we have this connection because our inhibitions are down. We have none. So, and like, it's not a great connection, but still it's very, very quick. So yep. Now I had to kind of get reacquainted with this idea that making friends doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen in a bathroom in a bar. You don't just like immediately connect. Like, I say it because like I remember scrolling through my phone at one point being like, oh my, who are these people? And they were people that I met in bathroom bars or bar bathrooms that are like, oh my God, I love you. Oh, I love you. Oh, let's get each other's numbers. Never spoke to them again. I want to add that little caveat in there that true connection takes a long time, and it doesn't have anything to do with you or what you're lacking or what you're not bringing to the relationship. It just takes time.
Yeah. And I love that you added that too, because if people have been paying attention to our timelines, like, yeah, but if you think like it was just enlightenment, like a yoga retreat, 3-day yoga retreat, and now this is how we're both talking. No,
yeah.
You know, it was 6 years into me stopping drinking, and then another 4 basically for me to be where I am right now. And it was not one moment, boom, I'm on this. It's, as you said, a lot of little moments, a lot of seeds planted that create the forest. And it's different things too, things that you didn't even realize we're going to help get you to where you want to be. But when you foster that open mind and you keep it and realize when you're kind of closing your mind off, and then you can kind of open it with your awareness a little bit more, it creates that. And when you find the community and find connection and find that good discomfort that you have been looking for, but you didn't know that that was where the growth was, you can start to lean into it and find something. So that's I'm glad that you put that caveat in there. Celeste, if people want to keep up with you and connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
So as you mentioned before, I am a certified coach, currently doing my master's. So I'm not really focused on the coaching aspect a ton right now. It's something that I do want to get sort of reacquainted with in the new year. As far as coaching is concerned, I might end up taking on some clients in the new year. But if you're just wanting to connect and get some feedback or just hear a little bit more about me and share a little bit about you, you know, if anything that I said really resonated with you, then please, please feel free to reach out. You can find me on Instagram. My name is Celeste is on fire, like Alexis on fire. For those of you who are familiar with, the little heart, a little bit of a hardcore scene, but so you can find me there on Facebook. It's Celeste Lillian. So please, absolutely, if you feel that you just want someone to be a sounding board for you, or you really connected with something, please feel free to reach out.
That's great. This conversation was absolutely wonderful. And I encourage people to, reach out and follow Celeste so that you can see when she, posts about the coaching, because she's really, as you can tell, very knowledgeable and able to break these concepts down in ways that are approachable, right? And that's something that is really important, especially when you're beginning this journey, when things can seem daunting and overwhelming. So Celeste, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
And it's been a privilege, RJ. Thank you so much for having me.
This is awesome. I can't wait to have you back on. So now you're obligated because I said you're coming back on. So just so you know.
Round two. Sign me up.
Everybody, let's try to be better tomorrow than we were today, because at least we don't make it. We tried. Have a great week, everybody. I love you.